This evening I want to speak to us about the idea of what happened to Judas. And you see, there's a reason that I'm saying it that way is because I think that sometimes Judas gets a bad rap about some things. And I want to try to prove that, but let's go to Luke 22 and begin in verse 1 as we begin. That's Luke 22, verse 1. It says, "Now the feast of unleavened bread drew near, which is called Passover, and the chief priests and the scribes sought how they might kill him, for they feared the people. Then Satan entered Judas, surnamed Iscariot, who was numbered among the 12. And so he went his way and conferred with the chief priests and captains how he might betray him to them. And they were glad and agreed to give him money. So he promised and sought opportunity to betray him to them in the absence of the multitude." And so the plan has been laid. And as I go back and I begin to think about Judas and how things have unfolded, I want to begin with the idea that he holds the money bag. And I generally like to think that most of the time, if there's going to be a group of people and whatever, that we would put the money bag in the hands of somebody that is good with money, that he can give accounting and that sort of thing. And so I'm going to lean with that idea that he did, that he holds the money bag because he was pretty good with money, that he didn't understand why Jesus, who could heal all the diseases and can still the wind and the rain, that can do the things that he can do, why are we walking around poor? We don't have to live like this. Charge them a dollar. Okay? If you could cure cancer for a dollar, how much money would you have? And you say they would be fabulously wealthy. And so then he has this eye for wasteful expenditure. So that when Jesus is anointed with oil and that is counted as about a year's salary that was poured out on Jesus, oh, that's a lot of money to just be pouring out. And so he's going to watch the details of money along those lines, and so he objects to that. And then I think the part that we don't lift about him that you have to think about is that he absolutely believes in Jesus Christ. I think he is an absolute believer. And let me tell you why. Because I think that in his practical mind, someone who can heal any disease, can walk on water, still the wind and the waves, raise the dead, that he could disappear when people are looking for him, and he just sort of evaporates in the crowd, is that you can't take him. This is truly the Son of God, and you can't take him. So, he is a greedy man. He'd like to have money, and we understand that. And I also want to say that while we look at that and we look down on that idea, that he is just a man. And so, if we were to enumerate each of our own sins, would we not have something that falls into the category of that should never be? You shouldn't be like that. And so I don't see him as being overly anything with his greed, other than he needs to get that into check, just like we need to get our sin in under check. And so he is certainly no worse than Peter, who is going to deny the Christ three times. And we understand with Peter that when Peter does this, he is the gung-ho charge guy that says, I will lead the whole thing, you know. And so when he's in the garden and a Roman cohort comes in, that's 450 to 500 men, or to 600 men even, that plus the Sanhedrin guard comes in and he's ready to start the fight. Okay, we've got God right there. We're going to win this thing and I'll start it. And when Jesus says, put your sword up, you can just see Peter, put my sword up. It's obvious that the time has come, that this is the time for your kingdom. This is, put the sword up. What are we going to fight with? because he doesn't understand. I think Judas is identical to that. He is following Jesus, and he thinks he knows what's going on, but he doesn't really know what's going on. So that this man, just like all men, just like me, makes a mistake. So I figure that Judas wants something that 30 pieces of silver will buy. I mean, he's the one that names the price. And so what is it that he wants for 30 pieces of silver? And what he doesn't realize when he's doing that is that he just put a number on what he is worth. He is worth only 30 pieces of silver, because he would sell his integrity for 30 pieces of silver. He would betray his own friend and sell him out for 30 pieces of silver. He would let his reputation go for 30 pieces of silver. And he did just what Esau did. He sold out for nothing. So, in Matthew 16:26, it says, "For what profit is it to a man if he gains the whole world and loses his own soul? Or what will a man give in exchange for his soul?" And here we have someone that has shown us exactly what he would sell out for. And it was 30 pieces of silver. And so that silver bought a potter's field. Okay, that is a place that's going to where they bury strangers. And more than likely it buried Gentiles there and those types of things. But what 30 pieces of silver cannot buy? It cannot, okay, buy Christ's life back. Because he's going to try that. Judas tried to return the money. The deal had been struck. He had not looked at the consequences of his actions, and now he was counting money or what it could buy instead of understanding what he was selling. And in the process of that, you see, he can't buy even concern for what I've done. He goes to the religious men of the day and he says, "I have betrayed innocent blood. I have sinned by that." And they say in return, "What is that to us?" Now, if we ever think that we understand what was going on in New Testament times while all these things are happening, I want you to understand, when religious leadership doesn't care a thing about sin anymore, that they don't care about what you are and what you're going through, when they have no touch with you and to the people, do you understand where they are? They are false leaders. They are not what they should be. And they certainly are not God's leadership. You'd think that that being called high priest or chief priest would care about men's souls, but they don't. And so Judas found out that his accomplices were willing to go further than he was, you see. We want him dead. That's the point. And so they care nothing for any of this, about his guilty conscience, his shame. And that 30 pieces of silver then cannot give Judas the pleasure that he sought. And that whatever plans he made for the money, it's gone because of what has happened to his friend. Matthew 26:24 says, "The Son of Man indeed goes just as it is written of him, but woe to the man by whom the Son of Man is betrayed. It would have been good for that man if he had not been born." When I was younger, I thought that that passage was talking about the penalty for betraying the Messiah. And in a certain way, I can't move away from that viewpoint, but I want to make another point. If you did that to your friend, and your friend was God, and you lived, every day of the rest of your life, you would regret what you've done. Would you not? Would you ever call yourself a good man again, or a good woman, that I could be good after I've done that kind of betrayal? Could I allow myself that kind of feeling ever again. I think that that's what Paul is all about, that the Saul that was the man he was after he becomes Paul understands what I did. I laid the church of the Lord low. I went against the very thing that would save us. I have sinned. And not in a small way, in the biggest of ways. I have done the thing that I shouldn't do. And in the process of his doing that, he calls himself the chiefest of sinners when he has reversed his role and become one of the greatest workers that has ever been for God. And yet none of that counts in my heart when I know what I did here. I think that Peter is identical to that, that after denying the Christ three times, I don't think that he lets himself become comfortable ever again in the love and the of God. Not that he doesn't love God and that he doesn't know that God loves him, but I will never let my big mouth run again. And so, in Luke 22, verse 3, then Satan entered Judas, surnamed Iscariot, who was numbered among the 12. So he went his way and conferred with the chief priests and captains on how he might betray him. You see, here is another place that we have to understand. Judas sought this. He's the one that went. They didn't say, we have a bulletin out that says anyone who will come and betray Jesus to us, we'll give him some money. That wasn't so. He designed this. And I want us to see that as Peter drew the sword and did what he did because of what he thought about Jesus, that he says, I'm going to go get me a little money off of this thing because you can't touch Jesus. That's the point. He's my friend. You can't touch him. There's nothing you can do to him. He's God. That's the confidence that he had. And yet, he becomes the betrayer by having an overconfident attitude, by not assuming the attitudes of Jesus and understanding what they were about, by not getting the picture. We got to see it. He goes and he does something that he would have never done because he really didn't understand. Jesus is being sought by the Jews. Remember, well, if he wants to go back to Jerusalem, let's just go up and die with him. That's how they felt. They knew what was happening. And so they go, and it was Judas, you see, that went with them and contrived his own idea and then followed it through. And so let me ask you, have you ever done the same thing? Have you ever had your own idea of how things should be and that I'm going to do them the way I think because I think God was a little short-sighted on this? I'm going to go do what it is and do what God has forbidden. And how do you tell yourself that you're not betraying the Lord when you do it? Because you're counting the gain of what's going to happen when I get to the end. And that's the way sin is. Sin was going to promise you more than you're going to receive in the end. And so people do it all the time that they think they're going to do this good thing. I'm going to accomplish it in the wrong way. And that the selling of my integrity doesn't mean anything because I really didn't sell it. I'm going to gain this good thing for the Lord. And when it's over, sin has taken them way further than they meant to go. And the results are nothing like what they thought they were going to have. And so when I make that point, we tell ourselves we're not betraying the Lord, yet we are. And that if you received everything that you thought you were going to receive doing it, I'll even go further than that, received more than you thought, that when you betrayed God, did you gain anything? Truth is, probably not. So Judas isn't just being practical when he challenged about the money spent on anointing of oil for Jesus, you see. He's not doing his job by being a good accountant over money. He has let his sin rule over him, and he is concerned about what he could have pilfered rather than what this is really about. He doesn't even understand why a year's salary could be poured out on his head. And so, sin will take you further than you ever wanted to go. And as we've already shown, that sin will cost you more than you ever thought it would cost. Because sin cannot buy back betrayal. Sin cannot buy back your innocence, your reputation, your friends. It especially cannot remove the memory of what you've done. Sin will never bring you closer to God. Sin leaves you alone and desolate and guilty. And once you go down that path, it's hard to come back. So, why did he kill himself? Does he not believe that Jesus would forgive him? I think not. I really believe that that's a part of it. I think that's it. How can I go to God and tell him what I've done, that my sin is greater than anyone else's sin has ever been? This is unforgivable. To God? Not to God, because God can forgive anything. But to me, I can never go back after I've done this. And so, in that rush while he's there, he goes to the chief priest and he tries to make the plea. I have sinned and I need you to say something to me. Help me, because I have done wrong in what I'm doing. We don't care how you feel. Go away. He understands that there's going to be no reconciliation of things that have happened with men. If chief priest won't listen to me, you see how this begins to build, and as it's building within him, I can't go back to Jesus because look at what I've done. It's greater. I betrayed him and he is going to die because of me. And he truly feels that that's exactly so. And even though all the statements that had been made, and I've never understood why the apostles don't remember unless God kept them from remembering, that I will, as soon as he's named as the Son of God, I am going to be taken by wicked hands and I am going to be scourged and I am going to be mocked and I am going to be killed. And they never hear that. It's told to them again and again and they never hear that. And now that it's going to happen and we're in the throes of it, Judas can't remember any of the things that have been said, that this was foretold and it's been planned ahead of time. And that's the way it's going to be. And so it is not about your betrayal, it is about the plan of God. And if we could just understand what that means, what the plan of God is about, then my error is not the biggest thing. And so you ask yourself the question, what would you give in exchange for your soul? That's what the passage that we read said. Judas sold out on Jesus for $21.62 in 1958 currency. So very little. Esau sold his birthright for a bowl of soup. Many men have sold for less than that. And so God calls them profane. So, for me, Judas is named as the betrayer. We know that he's the betrayer. We know what has gone on. We understand what has happened to him. And I ask you the question tonight, is the betrayal the kiss on the cheek to identify him as Jesus? Or is it in the suicide that won't believe that God can forgive? When I look at the other 11, and they all ran away, every one of them betrayed, if you will, under those terms. Let these go, and they do. They run. And they run, and of course we see what Peter does, we see what Judas does. Okay, and it was all the plan that Jesus be truly alone when he suffers. And when we see all that and we understand it, you see, the betrayal then is here in the heart of Judas. That after he dwelt with him for 3 years, learned of him, understood so much, and there was much that you've got to know that he knew. But he didn't understand. And in not understanding, he was taken, his love, his dedication, his sacrifice for living the way he did for the 3 years is all gone, and all he thinks that he has is one escape, which is suicide. So Judas learns a very hard lesson about how dirty sin is. Takes him away from everything that was dear, and it gave him nothing in return. And I believe that every adult here knows what that means. Can we learn the lesson? Becomes the question. Can I learn to leave sin alone because of what it does to me? I hope. So I want to add another point. Okay. When you give your children all that they want, have you done them a favor? Now I understand the idea that after World War II and that all has been given to the war effort, and now people are coming home and we're having our children and we have suffered. There was a depression just before the war, and the poverty and the things and the hardships are so vividly real that we want to give our children more than what we had. We want their life not to be like my life has been. And that shows itself in little things. I've mentioned this before. My father grew up as a little boy, very poor, and because of the depression, the leftovers from the depression. And so they ate sweet potatoes so very often that he wouldn't let a sweet potato in the house. That was a measure of being poor. You couldn't do him a favor. You couldn't make him a pie. You couldn't do anything that had sweet potato in it. He would become ugly and put it back on you. Take this away. I don't want it. And thank you for your idea, but there's nothing about a sweet potato that I ever want to have. Go. The sense of lifting people to the point where they think that what I think matters more than what God thinks is not a good thing. That we must teach humility to our children. The sense that our country wants us, don't spank children anymore, don't do the things that, because someone has gone overboard, and I understand that they have, someone doesn't have the right reasoning, and I understand, but there is a place where God said, he who spareth the rod spoileth the child, and that we should do the thing that God says do. That we should teach them what the nurture and the admonition of the Lord is, and that it is not about the abundance of the things that you have, nor is it about you getting your way, nor is it about anything that you desire. And so, I want us to see that if they want more than what you give them, that what you give me is not enough. That we have that place where we could be raising a Judas who nothing, no matter how much you give them, is enough. Always looking for more and never had enough. You can create a monster by giving them too much. And as you consider how to raise your children, I want you to see it's not by excessively giving. And now let me flip that coin for just a second. If you would excessively give, not because you're a giver, but because you feel guilty for the time you've robbed them of, then you need to fix that. What do your kids need? They need you. You and your ideas and your guidance. They need to understand why you believe as you do in the living God. They need to know you. Your first line of learning how to speak about the hope that lies within you is with your children. And if we don't do that, do you understand what we leave them to? We leave them to people who become greedy and want something and more than they should have. And you see, so that they need to be hungry to receive the good things by doing right. Now there's a much that I would condemn my father's methods for, because he was a hard man. And I'm saying a hard man, and yet when I say he was a hard man, he wasn't harder than anybody else's father I knew. They were hard men too. When I tell you to do something, boy, I mean it. And we did it. And you better do it fast enough. And you better do it thoroughly. And you better, okay? And all those kinds of things that I thought he was being hard on me for. And he was. And yet at the same time, I learned respect that when my father finally said one time, good job, I wanted that feeling all over again. And I tried and tried. And many times did not get that. But I knew what the best feeling in the world is approval by the one in authority, the ones that we love. And when he taught me about a God that is real, and I want that approval. And he gave me something that though he didn't know how to teach it, he taught me. What are we going to teach our children? What are we going to teach them about love, compassion, forgiveness? Will you as parents say you're sorry for what you've done? Will you do those kinds of things? We ask those questions so that we don't become a Judas, that we don't go too far, that we help them to see that a clear conscience is worth than any possession that you could ever possess. And never sell your innocence, because it's precious. It's not easy to teach someone to love uprightness rather than selfish ambition. And it's hard to learn to wait for a treasure when all you have is a pittance in your hand. It is hard to learn to deny yourself. Last question you can ponder. Did Jesus choose Judas knowing all that? Did he know that he's going to be betrayed by Judas and you can't help but say yes? Then why choose him? Why? Knowing the weakness. Or did he choose him because he believed, knowing that he would make a mistake one day that would teach all of us for all time? I'm not God. I can't answer those questions. But I know this. Choose this day whom you will serve. Joshua made that statement so many years ago. And yet, he was so very right. It is in the choice of whom I will serve that I will be what I should be. May we be that. If you're not a Christian, become one. Quit putting that idea off. Quit taking the sense that one day or maybe sometime or I need convincing, and take the leap of faith, as they say, and do the thing that needs to be done. If you believe in Jesus Christ, then become a Christian. And if you're already a Christian and you aren't choosing the way you did the first time you chose, then fix it today. And if we can help you, come as we stand and sing.